you take so long to come to me? Oh, baby. And love, love, your love. Tell me, were you hiding from me all the time? Each time I tried to find someone to take your place, it was all in vain. No, their lips were never quite the same. No, baby, when I was kissing someone new, deep inside I was missing you. Oh, baby, you made me fall in love with you. Now I don't know just what I'm gonna do. Oh, honey, I looked out into empty space and all I saw was your.
This is The Spec, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. And welcome back, everybody, to The Spec, Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. You already know what it is. And today, everyone, I'm not going to waste any time. I have a very special guest, a good friend with me, David Rivas. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. It's been nice weather at Tufts University this week, and I'm a little bit nervous, but we're going to see how it goes. Yeah. This is my first time on anything live, so...
Yeah, but. Well, we're very happy. I'm very happy to have you on. The listeners are very happy to have you on. It's great. And, yeah, it's true. It's been weirdly warm out lately, that's for sure.
It's kind of scary because it's, like, it's nearing the end of October, and it's like, oh, yeah. It should get cooler a bit.
Yeah, it has some dire implications, but we'll try not to think about it, even though we should. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on, David. I really, really appreciate it. I'm excited for this next hour. We got a lot to talk about. It's going to be a good time. So for those that have listened before, and this is something that I always start off with my guests, is a little bit about where you grew up. What was it like growing up where you did? How did it shape you? And also, what was the transition like when you first came to Boston, when you first came to Tufts? Walk me through. It's a lot to unpack, but walk me through it a little bit.
No, yeah. So I'm from Honduras. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know where that is, that's a small nation in Central America, roughly about 10 million people. Compared to America, it's quite tiny. But I grew up in a small town near the Caribbean coast. And I grew up there for 13 years and then moved to the nation's capital. That's near the center of the country.
Yeah.
When I was 14 years old. And I would say that my growing up has been somewhat of a rough transition period, just because it's moving from a small town where my grade was only 20 people to moving to a town where there's, I think, a million to around that. It's a densely populated area. And then my high school grade was like 80 people, which compared to American institutions, especially the public ones, it's a lot smaller. Yeah. But from 20 to 80 and growing, like going from knowing everybody in your school to barely knowing anybody was quite of a rough transition. But honestly, I think my life is very much about adaptation, especially because we got the pandemic in 2021 and it was our senior year. So that was a little bit rough. Applying to university was also a little bit complicated, especially doing it remote and not being able to access as many resources as American students have, or even European students. But we made it through. I got luckily admitted to Tufts University, and it was another change there because I had never been outside my country, except for like a couple Latin American, Central American nations, Nicaragua and Guatemala, but that was for like 3 days each for a school trip. It wasn't like that big of a deal. So coming to another nation with a different culture, a different almost society and like cultural norms and cultural values was a little bit difficult. But honestly, I think freshman year, first week of school, that's when I met you.
Yeah.
And that fateful soccer game in the academic quad at Tufts University. And honestly, I've loved my time here. I try to go back very little to Honduras just because there's so much stuff here. There's amazing movie theaters, amazing parks and walkable areas. That transition was rough, of course, but I've adapted and I'm honestly very happy to be here. And sadly, we're nearing the end of our academic period here at Tufts. But hopefully looking forward to the future and hopefully staying probably in the East Coast. I kind of like
Let's go. Fall here
is beautiful.
It is truly amazing. And first of all, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. It's particularly interesting for me to just hear everybody's perspectives when they're coming from all sorts of places around the country, around the world, when I bring them on the show. And I feel like that's something I try to do, is bring people on who are coming from all these different places and hearing how perspectives are different and some are similar and shared experiences. But particularly for me, you know, I'm from Massachusetts. I went to a big school and I stayed local. And that is obviously a very different experience than yours. But I think what's really, you know, amazing about our experience here and the people that we've met and the people that we're friends with is that, you know, we are friends and that we do have shared interests. And despite us having these very different upbringings, we've found ways to, you know, bond and be good friends. So I think that there's something really, really cool about that. And how about maybe you already alluded to this a little bit, but tell me a little bit about, you know, what it was like. You know, you talk about autumn, you talk about the fall and how beautiful it was here. What was that like, you know, going even just like as simple as like different climates, what that transition was like going from, you know, not much winter at all to a lot of winter? Walk me through that and how you adjusted to that aspect of it.
No, yeah, definitely. I was a bit concerned when I was like packing stuff before back in August 2021 before coming here. But surprisingly enough, I think Boston gets a lot warmer than back in Honduras.
Yeah.
When I came here, it was around like 85 degrees, that like nearing the end of the Boston summer, that like humidity and all that. Back home it was like, it's usually like 75 degrees.
Sure.
If it's a hot day, it's like 80 degrees. But, that was a bit shocking when I first came here. But then transitioning into fall, it was nice to get like weather like 60 degrees, 65. I love 65 degree weather. I think that's like the best type of weather.
Oh, me too.
And luckily for winter, I know the winters here can get brutal sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And people talk about layering and putting on two sets of sweatshirts and putting on gloves and all that. But luckily, one of my mom's friends got me a North Face parka. And that's what I've been wearing for most of the winters here. And honestly, I have friends that put on three separate layers and the thermal underwear and the thermal everything. And I'm like, I just put on the parka and I'm fine.
I've been here. I've lived here my entire life, David, and I still don't know how to do it. It is the winters here are. Yeah, you said it. Brutal. And some days are colder than others. Some days there's snow. Some days there's not. There is no science to it. I'm really happy you found something that works for you, because I still feel like 22 years living here, I haven't figured it out. So that's cool.
I think, honestly, it's a balance of whether you want to look good or look ridiculous.
Sure. There's that, too.
If I show you my park, and we're probably when it kicks, November kicks in, middle of November.
Yeah.
Late. Early December, I'm probably gonna have to take it out.
Yeah,
it looks ridiculous, but it does the job, honestly. And Boston summers, though, I've stayed a couple summers here during the middle, and 95 degree weather sometime, that's like, Honduras doesn't get that hot, which is crazy because it's like near the equator. You would think, oh, it should get warmer than here in Boston, who is almost in the tip of the northern hemisphere, but it's weird how climate works, honestly. And I've adapted.
Good.
I just don't like the sudden changes. Like one day it's 50 degrees, and then the next day it feels like summer again. It's like
can't make up its mind.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I could go on and on about the weather. I feel like I talk about the weather all the time on this show. But you brought on some music for us today. I want to make sure we have time to play some of these songs. The first one is This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads. I know this one's special to you. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, honestly, I had not listened to any Talking Heads before last fall.
Okay.
But last year, the Talking Heads came out with their remastered, revamped last concert film called Stop Making Sense. It was released by A24, 4K remaster, surround sound, all that jazz. And I watched it with a friend that we like David Bowie, and I know there's like Bowie in it, there's Velvet Underground, and I like that era of the 70s, 80s rock music. But This Must Be the Place is like almost like a comfort song.
Yeah.
It's quite mellow and almost dreamlike. And it has like a nice message. Like, I think talking about where I grew up and how difficult it has been to change from place to place, I think This Must Be the Place talks about like finding that comfort zone, that like place where you feel comfortable in. And just it's a lovely song. Like the performance as well, I really recommend people to watch the documentary if they haven't. It's like a quasi documentary. It's their last show, but it's like filmed very interestingly. It's on HBO Max, so if people want to give it a go. But
great. Well, I'm super excited to listen to it. Thank you for bringing it on. This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads. Here it is, everybody. Enjoy. Thank you. That was This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads. What a great song. I don't think I've... What's crazy is I don't think I've ever heard that song before, and I like Talking Heads, so I'm very happy you introduced me to that piece. It was very, very chill. We were just both sitting in our chairs here, like, bopping along. I like it. So let's talk about some of the stuff you're involved in on campus, if that's okay. So you're big on sustainability, I know, and one of the things on campus, ways to get involved in sustainability, is Sustainable Core Fellows. First of all, I was just wondering, you know, for the people listening, if you could explain what that is.
No, yeah, definitely. So the Sustainable Core Fellows are a student organization under the Office of Sustainability here at Tufts.
Yep.
We used to have another name, but we transitioned into the Core Fellows, which is an acronym for Cultivating Our Resilient Environment. And we focus primarily on sustainable celebration and environmental justice and bridging the Tufts community with the greater Boston community. Just because throughout the years... I've learned how impactful climate change and environmental issues can be towards minority groups, especially in a diverse city as Boston. So I joined the Sustainable Core Fellows a couple of years ago. But I started with the Office of Sustainability as a specialty recycling intern. So for people who don't know, there's more stuff that can be recycled than just plastic and paper.
Yeah.
There's plastic bags, there's electronics, ink cartridges, etc. So I took care of that for a summer here.
Cool.
But yeah, after that, I took a break during sophomore year, sophomore fall, and then sophomore spring, I started to work with the previously known group. I can't say its name because we're trying to go away from that. But yeah, Sustainable Core Fellows here at Tufts, we try to work with other student organizations and outside environmental organizations.
Cool.
To bring a new lens to sustainability and not solely, oh, it's about composting, recycling, and that's it.
Cool.
There's so many lenses to sustainability that we're trying to bring those perspectives all together.
And one of the big things I love about the Core Fellows and what they do for campus is how community-oriented it is. Again, you were alluding to it. It's not just like, oh, implement these into your daily practices with waste, but it's really a community effort in putting together like events and ways of getting out into the community like you were talking about. And that leads me sort of to my next question, which is there a particular project that you have in mind or some experience being part of the Core Fellows that would particularly resonate with you and was a really like was a memory that stands out to you as this is why I'm doing what I'm doing with the Core Fellows? Doesn't have to be one.
Yeah, no, I think there's so many events we put through like we put on throughout the years, but I feel like a general idea is not a specific event, but
yeah,
the ability to bring so many different ideas and event planning into it. Like one year we had an eco cinema month where we showed independent films that dealt with various environmental justice issues. Or we put on a tote bag swap. Tote bags are very popular now, and we wanted, and they're all often also given out at events or as merch, and people sometimes have too many tote bags, so we try to do this instead of a clothing swap, a tote bag swap. Recently, this year, I'm leading an area, so the Core Fellows are divided into three areas with different themes, and we students, it's solely a student organization. We have a program coordinator from the Office of Sustainability, but all the planning, all the advertising, all the logistics are done by students, which is great.
Excellent.
And we, my area that dedicates on global sustainability, has put on some events collaborating with Japanese Culture Club, and just yesterday the Women in International Relations Club. And it's just a couple of years ago I wouldn't have imagined working with these organizations to bring a sustainable lens into their activities, but just that openness and that freedom for us to be able to do events that a few years ago nobody would have thought were possible, just because we had that lens of just composting, recycling, things like that. So yeah. I think that change into community building and outreach and working with both Tufts community and Greater Boston community has really opened up the opportunities of what we can do.
That's amazing. That's really good to hear. And it sounds like it's definitely come a long way from a few years ago, which is a huge accomplishment to you guys. So now kind of looking ahead to the future of the Core Fellows, can you identify a couple of like the big goals, overarching goals? Because I mean, like, you're a senior, you're going to be moving on from the Core Fellows after this year. What are some of the goals that you've continued to talk about with the rest of the group about, okay, these are things we want to put into motion now and we want to see be enacted and continue to grow within the Core Fellows over the next few years and beyond?
No, yeah, definitely. So I think the transition from the previous group name to Core Fellows just happened last year. And I think we had a rough start, just considering we were trying to sell ourselves again from an already established group.
Yeah.
So there comes a lot of confusion with that. And even to this day, it's kind of hard to navigate that previous association. So I think one of our goals is just thinking, how can we become more embedded into the tough psyche and make people forget the previous group? And I think that also is going to help as more generations come into Tufts, more class years. I think our class year might be the last class year that really knew the previous group. But also embedding environmental justice into any framework across Tufts, whether it's an organization or an institution. I know the sustainability office is working with the administrative level, like the board of trustees, et cetera, to make environmental justice plans on how can we tackle that. Because, of course, for people who don't know, Tufts is on indigenous land. So working beyond just land acknowledgements and working towards tangible solutions towards historic aspects of our presence here.
Cool.
I think there's a lot of ways that the Office of Sustainability is trying to tackle a lot of issues. They have different student programs. I think for Core Fellows, it's becoming more known and making environmental justice more of a wider known thing across campus and across the community.
Well, that's great. And yeah, I personally am very happy with what you guys are doing on campus, and I know a lot of other people are. So keep up the good work. It's a lot of cool stuff coming up. I want to make sure we have some time for another song or two, so I'm just going to dive into that. Let Down by Radiohead. Can you talk a little bit about this song, why you want to bring it on?
I think a lot of my song suggestions today have been very, like, chill songs and songs that you can play and just dive into this world of, like, calmness and almost transience of understanding how you have to live in the moment for a bit, but understanding that when the song's over, you're gonna have to move on, that temporality.
Sure.
Let Down, I listened to it and the new season, or not the new season, but there's a new season of this show called The Bear on FX. And it has an amazing soundtrack, and it's quite a stressful show to watch at some points. It's a Chicago kitchen turning into, or trying to be a Michelin star restaurant. So there's a lot of chaos into that. So with the inclusion of songs like Let Down, you get a little break from the chaos, a little break from the noise. And I really like the song overall.
Great. Well, I know this song pretty well, and I'm excited to listen to it again. It's Let Down by Radiohead. Hope you enjoy, everyone.
Thank you.
Let Down, Radiohead from OK Computer. Just a great song, a great album. I was just like marveling at the end of the song right there with the little twinkles going on. I was like really obsessed with that. Anyways, we're halfway through the show. It's everyone's favorite time of the show. It's PSA time. David has the big book of public service announcements. David, what do we got today, man?
Well, Sam, even though marijuana is the safest known psychoactive drug, legal for adult recreational use in many states, including Massachusetts, and nobody has ever died from an overdose, when you get high, your brain functions differently.
Mm.
Consuming cannabis and products derived from it containing THC will alter your senses, change the way your body processes perceptions and thoughts, and affect your reaction times, most dangerously when you're faced with an immediate emergency situation, which can happen at any time when driving.
Mm.
It's a delusion that stoned drivers are better. Impaired drivers of any kind are more dangerous to themselves than others. So if you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a motor vehicle and driving. Walk to your destination, take public transportation, or find some way of getting a ride from an unimpaired driver.
Yeah.
Spend your time peacefully enjoying life as you safely get to your destination instead of worrying whether you might kill other people with a single mistake in your judgment. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Thank you for that. Yeah, it's just generally not a good idea. I think it's pretty common sense to not be under anything when you're driving.
Yeah.
So that definitely rings true. Anyway, moving on. The FMS department, Tufts Film and Media Studies, I feel like is a department that has made many appearances on this show and from guests and other people. I had Kelly Kimbis, who's also involved in the film and media studies department on the show a couple weeks ago. David, you are also one of those people that is involved in the film and media studies department. Do you want to, first of all, maybe just tell me a little bit about what that involvement looks like, and then we can get into your big project?
Yeah, no, definitely. I originally wasn't going to be involved in the FMS program.
Yeah.
I came into Tufts thinking about political science, and I'm still doing political science as you are,
yes,
but also doing a double major in FMS. And I became involved, firstly, by taking a class called Cinema of the Apocalypse, taught by the great Professor Susan Napier, who also teaches a class on Studio Ghibli at Tufts.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me into the world of, oh, I didn't know that film and media studies was a viable degree, because I used to watch films for enjoyment.
Sure.
And I still do, and I enjoy it, but the actual analyzing of film and writing about film is what got me mostly into it. So I became more and more involved into the department. I became part of the equipment room staff, just the place where students who are doing a production project can be able to check out cameras, audio equipment, lighting equipment, etc. So I've been doing that since sophomore spring. I was a projectionist as well for a class on film theory.
Yep.
Which that was also cool. Most recently, my biggest commitment currently is a senior thesis.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. It's kind of sad, but also it's awesome that I'm able to be part of this. I'm the only written thesis for film and media studies. A lot of the other theses are either screenwriting projects or actual short film projects. Mm. But I'm the only one doing like a scholarly research article. And I'm quite excited about this concept of the use of silence in film. Not solely about the Charlie Chaplin silent films per se, but more about the intentional use of silence by a director in a film. So I think the most contemporaneous example I can give was, I don't know if you watch Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Watching it in theaters when the atomic bomb,
I know,
the test goes off, there's a solid 20 seconds of silence,
nothing.
Of nothingness. And it, just now I'm having goosebumps because of that. I'm having chills just because it's quite an experience, especially if you do it in a theater. If you watch a film and it goes completely silent, it's very impactful. And of course, there are scientific reasons of why that happened in Oppenheimer and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. But there's so many movies that utilize it, and sometimes we can take that for granted. So I'm trying to dive deep into the anatomy of the use of silence throughout cinema, and I'm especially interested in the difference between the Western use of silence, which it's mostly to cause like tension or fear or wariness.
Yeah.
But if you looked at Japanese film, there's a lot of like what I was talking about earlier, that notion of transience, of understanding the empty spaces in life and understanding that those can, it's not that they should be filled, but it's okay that they're not noisy. It's like almost that meditativeness, that evanescence of life. So yeah, it's a hard task because it's like there's not much work on that lens. It's mostly through sound studies, and even then, it's very hard to find scholarly work aside from like an article or two or book chapter or two. So hopefully, I'm able to provide some insight into that. Cool. This field that I think we take for granted sometimes.
Yeah, totally. You could say that again. But that, first of all, just like a super fascinating topic. That one I feel like can be easily overlooked. Like we take it for granted in those moments when we're sitting in the theater and it's like, whoa, what just happened? And then you move on with like all the sound and stuff going on and you're like right back into that world. So there is something like very otherworldly about the use of silence in film now. And how that transition happened before. I mean, like we talk about, like there used to never be sound in movies, and now when there used to be never sound in movies, and now when there is intentional silence, how that meaning is completely different. So I that is super, super interesting to me. And so is the idea you're going to bring in multiple film examples, or you're mostly going to be focusing on like theorists and scholarly sources? Like give me a little bit more about what the actual breakdown might look like of this paper.
So it's kind of a daunting task overall because it's so open-ended. But I actually had a meeting with my thesis advisor, Professor Tasha Oren, who we took a class with her on just the general aspects of cinema called Art of the Moving Image. Yeah. And she recommended me to take more of like find a couple examples, like a couple concepts of how silence can be used and applying it to different directors. I have a list of directors. I want to include David Lynch, one of my favorite directors. And I tend to not have favorites in anything, but if I were to be asked, hey, what's your favorite director? I would say David Lynch. I want to include films by Ingmar Bergman, the Swedish director from the 50s and 60s, who tapped into a lot of existential cinema. And most recently, a movie that I really, really want to include is this film by the German director Wim Wenders called Perfect Days, about this Tokyo toilet janitor who doesn't really talk much, and his expression is mostly through the music that he listens to. Old cassettes from Lou Reed, Patti Smith, and it's such an impactful movie overall, just because it shows you that it's okay to not have anything going on with your life that's big and flashy, and taking part and enjoyment in the mundane can lead to a lot of like self-fulfillment. It's a film that I think it may bore people just because there's very little dialogue, but it compensates with the beautiful soundtrack and the beautiful visuals, and it takes inspiration from one of the greatest Japanese directors, Yasuhiro Ozu. So there's different lens, different cultures, different directors that I want to focus on. But for now, those are a couple that I want to include.
Very, very cool. And another thing within that that you alluded to is also the experience of sound, how it's different within a cinema as opposed to maybe just watching it on your TV, computer, you know, streaming things. It's the film industry is rapidly changing, as we know. I don't know. This is a very big question, and you might not have your own answer to it, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are on, like, the state of cinema and going the idea of going into a theater. Is that something that will still be viable in the long term and something that will be valued in the era of streaming? It's something that, you know, I wrote an article about it in the Daily last year about the how the film industry is changing. And I'm just curious, as somebody who appreciates film, your thoughts on that.
It's quite hard how COVID really impacted movie theaters.
Yeah.
And how the economy also impacted movie theaters. Back where I'm from, movie tickets are $4 at most.
Mm.
And here, if you go to an AMC or even a locally owned theater like the Somerville Theater here in Somerville and near Davis Square, it's $12, $15, even $18 at some point. So I think it's quite hard for people who used to love going to the movies to go now, just because, especially, like, I don't get popcorn, but I think there's an appeal to getting popcorn and your soda and your movie snacks, but then that can make a trip cost $40 minimum.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain demographic that of cinephiles that still go to movie theaters. I know the AMC has that movie pass that allows you to go to a lot of movies. Yeah. And I had it at some point and I really enjoyed it. And going to matinee screenings here at the Somerville and supporting your local community as well is also great. It's kind of a tough question. I think from my perspective, I'm still going to go to theaters when I have the opportunity and bring people along. Just because I think it's an awesome activity that we kind of lost for a couple of years. And I think movie theaters really need to find ways to diversify that movie-going experience.
Yeah.
So people are drawn more to do it. A theater that opened recently in Boston that's from Austin, Texas, is the Alamo Drafthouse. And it's quite an experience going there.
I haven't been yet. I'm excited.
I really recommend going. It's kind of expensive as well. I'm talking about movie ticket prices. I usually go on Tuesday where it's $7 tickets.
Sure.
And it's a whole different experience than just going to the AMC or the Somerville or the Brattle. You get a reclining seat and you're able to order actual food from your seat and you get bottomless popcorn and bottomless soda and it's curated and the previews are curated in a way where it's like clips that associate with the movie from older movies. So I think movie theaters really need to diversify and make it more available.
Sure.
Make it more easy to go to the movie theater.
Yeah.
For people who go to the AMC, I really recommend going and are near the Green Line last November. An AMC opened in North Station in TD Garden. It's quite a very nice theater to go to compared to the one in the Boston Common.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there is that demographic where they're going to continue to go to movie theaters, but streaming isn't it, I would say.
Streaming's
there's,
not it.
There's movies that, like, I know some people wait when movies are streaming, but I think if you have the chance, go to the movie theater, try to watch the movie there, because just sound quality, image quality, and just the experience of being able to sit in a room, go in for an hour and a half to two hours, and then come out with just a whole different perspective is better than just sitting on the couch at your house and just tuning into a movie and maybe half watching it.
I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. And I sure hope that there's more people out there like you and the other, you know, the other people that are still are going back into movie theaters. I hope that interest continues to kind of balloon back up again and wasn't completely diminished by COVID. And it'll be interesting to see over the next few years. But I have hope. I have hope. I do. Okay, let's do another song, and then we'll come back one more time. A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke, or Aretha Franklin, but Sam Cooke. What is this one about to you?
Well, we were talking about our love for soul previously before going on air, and I think we briefly mentioned it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big Louis Armstrong fan. Mm-hmm. My grandfather really loved Louis Armstrong, and one of the first songs I listened to by him was what's the one about the wonderful...
What a Wonderful World.
That one.
Yeah.
And I think that's what got me into soul a bit. And I was talking to a couple of friends recently, and we tend to play like chill nights. We tend to play soul. My friend Ranveer Malik.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out to him. Maybe he's listening, maybe he's not. He showed me this song, and somewhat in the theme of change with my life.
Yeah.
A change is gonna come. It's like, be okay with that change. It's okay if times are tough right now. Mm-hmm. But be hopeful for the future.
It's a universal message, and definitely a great song to think about it too. This is A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. Enjoy.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there. Beyond the sky, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Change is gonna come. It sure is, by Sam Cooke. And as we wrap, we move towards the end of the program today, everybody. Let's unwind a little bit here. Let's get some recs from our friend David over here. We're talking about film earlier. What is a movie that everybody like needs to see right now, or something that's just a movie that's been on your mind? Give us a film that you want the viewers to think about.
I think as fall kicks in and we're nearing the ends of our fall semester going into winter, I think the people should watch Alexander Payne's The Holdovers that came out.
Yes.
That came out last year.
I love it.
It's a Boston movie, New England movie. There was a couple scenes in Boston Common.
Cambridge.
And it's honestly a feel-good movie I wasn't expecting to watch last year. But I'm so happy I watched it. And that movie has been in my mind recently just because it's almost that season.
Sure.
But yeah, I would really recommend that one. I think the movie I talked about, Perfect Days.
Perfect Days.
By Wim Wenders, 2023.
Yeah.
It's a great film. And lastly, I would say if you're in for like some sci-fi / fantasy, I would really recommend Danny Boyle's 2007's Sunshine, which is kind of a star-studded cast. Almost like there's Cillian Murphy, Benedict Wong, Michelle Yeoh, Chris Evans.
Wow.
And it was a great watch. It's entertaining, and it's like it keeps you on the edge of your seat. But yeah, those three, I would say Holdovers for the winter season.
Sure.
Perfect Days when you want to meditate, and Sunshine if you want to be entertained by action and adventure.
Amazing. We got a wide range of emotions here. We're covering a lot. I appreciate the recs. And I've seen The Holdovers. I haven't seen the other two, so I just literally got into my letterbox and put those on my watch list. So thank you for that. And also thank you for coming on to the show today, David. It has been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking with you for the past hour. Thank you.
No,
thank
really. You so much, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I kind of sometimes talk a little bit too long but I'm always happy to have these conversations.
Yeah.
I think in this technology age, we like texting and not really communicating face-to-face.
Yeah.
But I really like phone calls and face-to-face conversations.
No question. And I'm glad we can keep that tradition going here with you. You can hear our beautiful voices on the radio. And this has been The Spec. And you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you, everybody, as always, for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you're getting something out of this little show at Thursdays at 8 p.m. weekly. Next week's going to be a super spooky Halloween edition of the show, whatever that means. We'll see. So unlikely to have a guest next week, but we've had a lot of great guests on the show so far, David being the latest. And I'll have more where that came from later in November, that's going to be basically the next time the show's coming. So thank you as always for listening. This last song is a classic, and I think pretty much everybody knows this song, but I want you to explain a little bit about why you chose it specifically for tonight. It's Space Oddity by David Bowie. What's the deal with this one?
The first time I listened to David Bowie was in 2013, and this is another movie rec that just came to mind. One of my favorite movies that kind of had mixed feelings when it came out, mixed reviews, but I think it's just that hidden gem that everybody needs to watch.
Yeah.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yeah.
Starring and directed by Ben Stiller. And Kristen Wiig actually plays an acoustic rendition of this song. And I'm like, I love that song. And then I got into David Bowie, and ever since, he's been one of my top three artists.
Cool. Well, this is a great one to end on. And thanks again, David. Thank you, everybody. This is A Space Oddity by David Bowie. We'll see you next week. Have a great night.
ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2.
Check ignition and may God's love be with you.